All right. Fantastic. Okay, if you have a Bible this morning, turn, if we will, to Colossians, okay? Colossians chapter 3 and 4. Colossians chapter 3 is a verse that we've been kind of talking about over the past few weeks. We'll see it in just a minute. I'm going to be switching around quite a bit to different kinds of verses, but you'll see that in just a minute. Anyway, it's good to see you. Welcome today to our HC service, and I know several of you are guests and visiting with us, and we're glad that you're here. But we've been in this series, in case that this is your first time, we've been in this series for a couple of weeks. We've just called Work, and I wanted to do a practical series, a series that how you can see, okay, this definitely fits in everyday life. I have found that those that can find fulfillment, those that can find even joy in their work, have just added a whole lot of fulfillment and joy to their lives because you spend so much of your time working. And so let's look at in a lot of different ways. And I'm going to do a little bit of a review from the last couple of weeks. This won't take long, but I want to get you in the context, especially those of you who haven't been here the last couple of weeks, I want you to get you in the context of understanding what we're talking about today. Our key verse, okay, is found in chapter 3 of Colossians in verse 23. And again, this is review from the last couple of weeks. And this is really all you need to know. But take a look at it there in verse 23. It says, whatever you do. Okay, now if you're a believer here today, here's the thought. What you do is irrelevant. That's why it says whatever you do, work. Whatever you do. Therefore, you can dig a ditch, or you can drive a bus, as I shared last week. Dig a ditch, drive a bus, or you can perform open heart surgery. And we have all those in our church. It does not matter. Okay? Now, to the world, the rest of the world, these different things matter. But to the Lord, it does not matter. Okay? Therefore, whatever you do, okay, work heartily. The word heartily means with all your heart. That is, putting your heart into it. Not just going through the motions, but to put your heart into it. Therefore, whatever you do, work heartily as to the Lord and not for men. In other words, I'm working for Him. Where does the motivation come to work? Where does the motivation come to give my best, to put my heart into it? It comes from knowing that I'm working for Him. Okay? I'm working for Him. And we've talked about this picture and this motivation. Therefore, we give our best because He gave His best for us. Comes this great picture. We'll talk more about this in weeks to come. Okay? Knowing that from the Lord, you'll receive an inheritance as your reward, right? And that you are serving the Lord Christ. The word to serve, therefore, or work. Therefore, I have to remember that in my work, I'm serving the Lord by doing what I'm doing because it is a testimony of Him. So we've taken a look at that. Last week we talked about ethics, but today I want us to transition. But I want you to see this whole thought of work and what this means. But today, this is a word for the boss, okay? A word for the boss. And that is those who have responsibilities, those who, if you will, have authority. And I want it's going to be an interesting day because when I say a word for the boss, probably the greater majority of you in here think about your boss. Okay? When you say, well, yeah, duh, Jeff. Or, but think about this. But I think a lot of you don't realize that people, that you have authority yourself and that you have people that are underneath you, whether it be one or two or 20. Some of you may have many as 200 or so that are underneath you. And so what I want to talk to you about today is those who have authority and the scriptural model of authority. It's an amazing picture because today it has gotten so bad that the only people that want to be in authority are the ones that we don't want in authority. And the ones who need to be in authority are tired of all the rebellion, griping, and complaining. Just want you to hear it. Just truth and honesty. And we'll gripe and complain about some of it. And the ones that can make it are the ones who don't care if you gripe or complain. Oh, knock yourself out. Right? And we wind up by who we are as a culture, driving away those who would be the best managers. We would be the best people who could do that. So therefore, I want to talk to you about today about being the boss, that is being in charge, what that looks like. And I want you to know it is a hard, it is a difficult day in which to have authority. Now, let me tell you who I'm talking to, right? If you have a work crew and you have two people that work along with you, but they work underneath you, that is, you tell them, you give them assignments, I'm talking to you today. Yeah, but Jeff, I got two under me, but I've got... No. We'll talk next week. A word to the employee is next week. That is a word to the worker. What the scriptures will talk about us. But I want to talk first about those who have authority. I want you to know that God puts a whole lot of stock in authority. It is very important to the Lord about being underneath the authority that is in your life. In fact, the scripture has a lot to say about it. There's just not enough time. The scripture also has a lot to say about leading and other things. And the difference between being a leader in the world around you, but also being somebody who's a leader that is the Lord's. And it's an interesting thing. God, I want you to know, God has a lot to say about this. Moses is one of the greatest, if you will, most celebrated leaders in the Bible. And he had a tremendous amount of authority. Obviously, God empowered him, right? He empowered him to be able to lead the people out of their slavery. But along the way, it was not an easy task. The people griped, the people complained, the people rebelled. In fact, if you want to know what God feels about rebellion against authority, read Numbers chapter 16 and the guy by the name of Korah. It's called Korah's Rebellion. You know, Korah, after they'd been wandering in the wilderness for a while, Korah began to think, you know, Moses, you know, you're not near as good as you think you are. In fact, we'd be a whole lot better off if I was in charge. But just read it. It's all there. It just sounds like it was happening today. You know, who set you up to be the prince of Israel? He'd say things like that. And I want you to know that God didn't take it kindly. And if you know the story, the ground opened up and swallowed Korah alive. And all those who'd rebelled. I mean, it's an amazing story. If you want, I mean, but see, here's the great struggle. And I know that I'm going countercultural with this message today. This is countercultural. Jeff, what do you mean by countercultural? I mean this. Is that to be rebellious is a popular thing today. You're considered, you know, sticking it to the man. You know what I'm saying? It's in all the movies. It's in everything we do. And therefore, rebellion is glorified today. But that's the exact opposite of who God's called you to be. I mean, it's an amazing thing when you take a look at who God's called us to be and what that looks like. You know, my own son called me, and he didn't even know what he said. It just was something he was just saying out loud, it struck me and has stuck with me. He called me from college, and he took on some extra jobs to make some extra money, and he took on the job of being a referee in intramural games. And he said, "Dad," he said, "these kids at this school are so uncoordinated." And I said, "I understand. They're just out having fun. Great." He said, "But do you know what?" He said, "It's an amazing thing." He said, "Our culture is set up to rebel against authority." He said, "Dad, I'm a 19-year-old referee of an intramural game. And they hate me automatically and don't even know me." I said, "Bud, you got it." I said, "You're exactly right. You're exactly right." So let me throw this at you, Okay, let me let you see. These are some amazing principles for us to all kind of hang on to and understand, because authority is one of those things that, again, as I've shared with you, those that want it, okay, are not worthy of having it. It's a weird thing, and yet usually in our culture, the only ones that get it are the ones that want it. And so it just, it's an incredible thing, but as we take a look as a believer, if you are a boss, and let me go on to say this, if you're a parent today, you're a boss. If you're a parent today, you have authority. Therefore, God has put you in authority over a child's life. And there is responsibility that goes with that authority. So when I'm talking about a word to the boss, I guess it's a word to those who have authority. And that's the majority of us. You're going to have somebody in your life that's going to answer to you. And we're accountable for how we use that. And it's an incredible person. I believe it's a very godly person. That's why we shared with you. Hope you paid attention, or at least a little bit, to the little blurb, the little sermon bumper there before the service. Because how do you see those underneath you? Do you see them as working for you, or do you see yourself as working for them? It's an amazing thing about those who have authority and those who do it well. Okay? You know, one of the hardest things is like when you're a pastor. If you had to know, I'm a pastor, okay? Okay, that's what I do. All right? But I'm also a boss. Boy, sometimes those things don't go very well together. Right? Because people have this view of the pastor is supposed to be smiling all the time. You know that fake pastor smile you see? And that you should never say no to anybody. Right? You just shouldn't. And because that's what pastors do. And you talk in this nice, calm voice all the time. See, I'm just not that way, okay? Because my desire is to not to be this ultra-polished and have everything planned. Because I'm just a real person just like you. But God has given me some authority because, I mean, we take a look at the church here. And we think about, you know, we've got several hundred employees when you put it all together. And so when it comes down to it, there's a tough. So I'm talking to myself today as much as I'm talking to everybody. But when you think about authority, when you think about being the boss, when you think about being in charge, okay, I want you to see that if you're a believer, there is a huge responsibility that goes along with it. So I want us to take a look today at Colossians chapter 4. I had you in chapter 3. Let's go just a little bit further. In Colossians chapter 4, verse 1. And if you have authority, whether you're a parent, whether you have one person that reports to you, or one day, more than likely, you're going to have somebody that reports to you. When you take a look at this stewardship, this, if you will, this opportunity, as you heard in the summer bumper, it was really neat. Let's take a look at Colossians chapter 4, verse 1. Now, it says, "Masters, treat your bondservants justly and fairly, knowing that you have a master in heaven." And you're saying, "Jeff, what does that have to do with a boss?" All right, that has to do with slavery. And it's the truth. That is what that has to do with. All right? But I want you to think about this for a second. When you see masters and when you see bondservants, what a master has done has paid for this bondservant. When you think about someone who is an employer, they buy your time and your talents, and you use your time and your talents in the way that the one who's paid for them asks you to. Now, that means they own your talents and time for that amount of time. That doesn't mean they own you to tell you what to do if it's unethical or things like that. But for this particular, they have bought that. Okay? If you don't like that, then don't hire yourself out, right? But that is the picture. We'll talk more about that next week. Now, but if you are a boss, that is, you are responsible for this. Now, let's put our words in there. Can you put that back up there? It says, masters, treat your bondservants justly and fairly, okay? Knowing that you have a master in heaven. Let's insert a different word, and I think this verse will come off the page for you. All right, here we go. Bosses, treat your employees justly and fairly, knowing that you also have a boss in heaven. Makes it difference, doesn't it? Here's the thought. You have authority, right? And that you have the authority to guide other people and what they're doing. And here's the picture. It's saying, listen, you treat them justly and fairly, just like you have a Heavenly Father who treated you and treats you justly and fairly. It's an incredible thing to think about. And when you look at it that way, it begins to change as a believer. But see, sometimes, a lot of times people, especially even Christians, they try to separate their work life from their personal life. And as believers, sometimes try to separate their work life from their spiritual lives. You just can't do that. Why? Because the scriptures teach that we're accountable to the Lord for everything that's been entrusted to us. Especially if God gives you or puts you in authority over someone. But I'm here to tell you, in the day in which you live, it is not an easy thing to do. You know, because you're just going to be tagged the bad guy. Because everybody wants to put pressure on those who are in authority to do what they want them to do. And I'm here to tell you, you're not always going to be a popular guy or gal. Because what happens when you have people that want you to do something and it's not right? It may be legal, but it's not right. And then you decide to do what you're supposed to do. I'm going to do what's right. And then you become a real unpopular person. See, that's what makes it so tough when you have authority. And you know, everybody wants to be in charge, but they don't want to have the accountability it takes to be in charge. And that's unless the people that just don't care, and those are tyrants. So as we take a look at this subject today, this is so practical. Okay? Every one of you in the room, just think about it. That every time you're in authority, one day you'll be a parent, or one day you'll have people that are underneath you. Think about this particular thought of this accountability and some just principles. I'm going to talk about some biblical principles today that have to do with a word for the boss, okay? A word for the boss as we think about Colossians chapter 4, verse 1. Those who work under you, all right, how are they treated? Okay, it's the same way that we want the Lord to treat us. All right, let's take a look. Let's take a look at three things. Three biblical principles for the boss to think about is to have inside of you. Now listen, these are not complicated. These are not complicated. In fact, I'm here to tell you, it's kind of phasing out, but still really strong. If you work in corporate America or corporate world, I'm here to tell you there are more leadership conferences than you can shake a stick at. In fact, there are even that many more that are Christian leadership. And I have found that so many of them are distinctively, or not different at all between whether it's a Christian one or a non-Christian one. They have all of these thought, and it all focuses on self. And you're going to see here in a minute that God's way that he's called from you is much different. All right, number one is what I'm going to be calling. It's what I'm going to call an uncompromising character. An uncompromising character. Take a look and just at the screen in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 21. For we aim at what is honorable, not only in the Lord's sight, but also in the sight of men. Therefore, to do what is right. To do what is right when you have the opportunity to do it. That's all that you can ask for. I'm here to tell you, just by way of illustration, you come upon a fork in the road as someone who has authority. And this happens. And you have to go one way. There, you can't go both ways. Right? You can't go, all right? You have to go one way. Now, if you go this way, then everybody over here is going to be happy. But everybody here is going to be upset. So half the people will be happy, half the people will be upset. Now, you have the opportunity to go this way. Everybody over here is going to be happy. Everybody here is going to be upset. Now, what are your criteria in the decisions that you make? Well, I like the people on this path a whole lot better than I like the people over here. People this way, look at, listen to this, think about this. This is fantastic. I hope you're hearing this today. I have found there's a wonderful passage in Proverbs that says this. It says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and don't lean to your own understanding. In all your ways, what does it say? Anybody know? Acknowledge him and he will make your path straight. So here's what I've come to do. Okay? I'm going to make people mad anyway. That's going to happen. And being a pastor is even harder. Because you're going to make people mad. Because you're going to hit these situations, right? But here's the thought that I've always come to. You may want to, if you're a believer here today, and you want to be one who's in authority, that one day is accountable to the Lord and said, Lord, I did the best I could do in those situations. And here's what I've learned to do. Is to rely on what the Scripture says. When I come to that, sometimes you don't have much time. You don't have time to go spend an hour over here or go find a secluded place. Sometimes you just have to say to your breath, God, I'm at a crossroads here. And I can look and do pros and cons, and I can do all this kind of thing. But Lord, it comes down to, Lord, I want to know what you want. In all your ways, the word for ways are highways. In all of your decisions on which road you're going to take, acknowledge him, and he'll make your path straight. Okay? So I've come upon this and saying, Lord, I don't care. I don't want, you know, I'm not trying to make everybody happy. I can't. It's not possible in this situation. So, Lord, I need to know what you want. And you told me, Lord, if I acknowledged you, you'd tell me the way to go. And then you pick a direction and then you go. Because he's made the promise to you, if you'll acknowledge him, he'll make your path straight. And it has helped me through the years that when people are upset and mad, you can say, listen, I took it to the Lord and this is what I thought he wanted me to do as best as I know how. But you know, uncompromising character, that is someone who will do what's right if you give them the chance. That doesn't make they're going to make all the right decisions. It's not possible. But if you're a person who has authority, you have to do the best you can do and then rest in the Lord the rest of the way. That's how you can find peace when you have so many around you that are upset with you at some time or another. Because you're not going to make everybody happy, even as a parent, especially as a parent. The thought is you're not going to make your children happy all the time. If that's your goal, you're in trouble. You're not going to be a very good person in authority. Right? But it's an incredible thing to think about. Uncompromising character. Okay? Every time, the honesty, knowing that you can be trusted, it's the basis for relationship. Accountable to a standard of what is right and what is wrong. Therefore, putting myself underneath authority in the areas that I'm under authority. I've found the best people who are great candidates to be in authority are those who have learned to be underneath authority. You put somebody who's rebellious in a position of authority and you're asking for a nightmare. Because people who don't know how to be under authority will never be good having authority. Does that make sense? Does everybody understand? So therefore, I found the people that make the best bosses are the ones who have made the best employees. Just doesn't happen in any other way. Therefore, those who have learned to be under authority are the ones who can be in authority and can handle it. So as we take a look, uncompromising character. Number two, personal humility. This is so funny because as I've referenced earlier, a lot of leadership seminars, a lot of stuff that is being taught on this particular subject that I'm sharing with you today, but I'm here to tell you so much of it is just an absolute wash. Because it's worldly principles, which so many times seem to be the exact opposite of what God has called for you. And therefore, what is personal? What is personal humility? What does that mean? Well, basically what it says, well, let's take a look at the Matthew passage that I have for you. Matthew chapter 20, verse 26. This is Jesus talking. It shall not be so among you, but whoever would be great among you must be the servant. In other words, the picture here is that Jesus is saying humility, that is caring. If you want to be great in my eyes, then you want to see how many people you can serve. Therefore, it's personal humility says, I care about you. I care about you more than I care about myself. And there's a huge difference here. I don't want you to miss this picture. To me, this is what distinguishes any leader from a great leader, is this idea of humility. When you take a look at the scriptures, you take a look at Moses and Joseph and David to a certain point. The greatness lied in humility, in the desire to help others. Let me tell you what I mean. This is a classic illustration because our world thinks, I mean, even Christian books and Christian leadership conferences, so many of them, they give a tacit approval to humility, but they move on to other things. I'm here to tell you, I believe it to be the core of what leadership is, what being an authority truly is, and from God's perspective. Our world says that leaders should be ego-driven. They should be self-confident. They should be self-promoting. They should be charismatic, hard-driving, wheeler-dealer, taskmasters. But I want you to know that that's not what the scriptures teach. In fact, that's what you see, though, when you take a look at television and you see these Shark Tank type people. You see Trump type people. And they're these egocentric men. I'm here to tell you, the people that work with them directly, they have to pay them a whole lot of money. Because who else wants to work with someone like that? Does that make sense? It may go good on television, but I'm here to tell you, it doesn't work over the long haul. Oh, Jeb, you don't know. You're just a pastor. Okay, take a look. Think about this. An old classic book. Everybody read it when it came out. It's kind of an old classic now, so it's not referenced as much. But it was an old classic book that was entitled Good to Great. Good to Great. It was not a Christian book. Secular book. Good to Great. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Raise your hand if you know what I'm talking about. Right? If you don't know, it's an old book. You can go to it. It's 20, 25 years old. But there was this guy, this author of the book. He did like a 20-year study of companies. He took over 1,400 companies that were good companies, and he charted them for 20 years. And he published his findings in a book called Good to Great. And he charted those over a long period of time. There were good companies that became great companies. Not flash pan kind of stuff, not self-promoting, not PR to where it makes the company look good when it's not good, but they really went from good to great. And only 11 made the cut. Only 11 made the cut. And so he delved into these 11 companies to find out what was it that made the difference in these 11 companies that went from good companies to great companies over the long haul. And this is what he found, which is the exact opposite of what you're taught today as someone who is in authority. Let's take a look at this. Just some quotes I wanted to read to you. The first thing that came from companies that went from good to great was leadership. And quote, let me just give you a couple of quotes. Just listen real close to this. These were findings of 20 years of study. Therefore, they have great impact to them. Listen to these quotes. They build, leadership, they build enduring greatness, that is greatness in the company, they build enduring greatness through a paradoxical blend of personal humility and professional drive. Now, that may not seem like a big deal to you, but he has found that the leadership in any company that over the long haul goes from good to great is in a company that develops what he calls a paradoxical. I thought that was interesting. Personal humility and professional driven. That doesn't mean you don't work hard. That doesn't mean you're not committed. But there's a humility to this person. Interesting. Listen to what else he said. In over two-thirds of the companies, in comparison cases, we noted that the presence of a gargantuan personal ego contributed to the demise or the continued mediocrity of the company. One who accepts responsibilities for failures and apportions credit of successes to other people. I'm here to tell you the Bible's taught this for a long time. Let me give you some personal illustrations. This will help you. I use sporting type illustrations because to me that you can understand. Now, it helps you understand this concept. I remember being in high school. And when I was in high school, I played both ways, what that means on offense and defense. And on offense, I was a guard. That is, I played the offensive line. Now, if you don't know what an offensive line does, they're the people that block, that keep the defense, from tackling your other guys. Now, we had an egomaniac in our backfield. A running back who had self-confidence. Okay? He was talented. He was one of the fastest kids in our region. But with that went a real ego. Well, I don't know if you've ever been an offensive lineman. If you haven't, you kind of kill yourself every play so that he can break free and run, right? And so, you know, and we would be, us five guys up there, we'd be killing ourselves. And, you know, he'd make a 15, 18-yard run and get up and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, as an offensive lineman, it kind of just made you sick. Does that make sense? And so, and then every time that he would get hit hard or got tackled in the backfield, he'd yell at all of us. Well, one time in practice, it didn't take long. Our high school coach was a wise person. I did not have a high school coach that was an idiot. I actually had a really solid high school coach, and he caught wind of this pretty quick. And so during practice one day when we were hitting pretty hard, he pulled the five offensive linemen aside and said, "Hey, here's what I want you to do." He said, "This next play, we're gonna just run a straight dive right up the middle." He said, "I want all five of you to throw a lookout block." Now, if you don't know what a lookout block is, it's kind of an offensive lineman joke. A lookout block is when you come up to the line and you get down and then you slip and fall on the ground and the guy goes running past you and you turn around and go, "Look out!" All right? Does that make sense? And so what happened is all five of us did that. This during practice. Snapped the ball, quarterback came back, handed the ball to the hot shot, right? And so we all just kind of laid on the ground, and all of our guys went running by us, and he got creamed. I mean, he got creamed. And the coach looked at him and says, "It's hard to do it all on your own, isn't it?" That's exactly what he said. It's hard to do all on your own. Why? Because I found that those who run the ball better take the time to take care of those who are working for him, or they'll stop working as hard for him. Does that make sense? But if you ever have a running back that after game interview said, "Hey, listen, I want you to know I got one of the best offensive lines in the state," it makes you want to work that much harder for a guy like that. Am I coming through? You know, it's huge for you to think about when you think about that. Because John Riggins, who is a guy who was voted the most valuable player, MVP of a Super Bowl, and he got this big cash award. You know what he used the cash award to do with? He bought all of his offensive linemen a new car. The guy's not a dummy. And I'm here to tell you, personal and gargantuan ego, which of you likes to work with somebody like that? Nobody. And yet that's touted as leadership? You see, but we're lied to. We're fooled easily because it thinks like, yes, somebody who's that way. No. We found the ones who can really take it from good to great are the ones who create a unity and those who have a desire to serve those who work underneath them. Yeah, it's an amazing thing, is it not? Personal humility. Number three. Also, those who have a genuine concern. These verses and these points all mesh together. They're not as separate as they look. Because I have found when you take a look at all three of these, when you think about someone who has an uncompromising character and somebody who has personal humility and genuine concern, they all fit together. Therefore, if you have one, you're going to have a tendency of having the other. And if you have the other, you're going to have a tendency of the third. But genuine concern, when you have personal humility, what is the definition of personal humility? It's someone who cares about others more than they care about themselves. Therefore, genuine concern, if you care about others more than yourself, then you're going to have a genuine concern about those that are underneath you. But they all kind of mesh together. But it's amazing when you put them together and look at them. And it begins to make sense. Number three, then, is genuine concern. Philippians chapter 2, verse 3 and 4. And you're going to see personal humility come out of this verse. Here we go. It says this, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit. Personal ego. It's all about me. That's what it says. Do not do anything from selfish ambition, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Here's verse 4. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. Now, I'm here to tell you that the people underneath your authority can tell pretty quick. Here's the thought. The people that are underneath you, are they there to make you look good? Or are you there to make them look good? And how you answer that question says a whole lot about your leadership style. I'm here to tell you, people pick up on it fast. Just like that. You know, just giving you an illustration, and I've got to be done here in just a few minutes. But I'll give you an illustration from parenting. Again, authority is kind of the same across the board. Right? So when you think about children, okay, if you understand, I'm a pastor. I've already shared that with you, but I want to share that with you again. I'm a pastor. And in case you didn't realize it, my children are pastor's kids. And it's something that is not always an easy thing. It can be a fishbowl type existence. But you can ask my children, not all at once, please don't. But you can ask my children, here's something I've committed myself to. Think about this for a second. When they mess up, and they've messed up, they're kids, they're going to mess up. And at the times when some of them have messed up the biggest, I've tried to never say this. Hear this. Do you realize how this makes me look? I'm the pastor. Why? Because that's a definite sharing that they should be making me look good. Therefore, when I discipline my children, it cannot be from an attitude and a point of view of, I've got to get them to make me look good. I've got to discipline them out of what's best for them. You see the genuine concern, and do you see the difference? Therefore, the genuine concern about what goes on in their lives. Therefore, I'm going to be tough on them, not because that's what's best for me, because that's what's best for them. That's why parenting, that's why people in parenting cower out and don't do very well in authority. Because if you really want to do what's best for them, you're going to have to be tough on occasion. And our culture tells you, you don't have to be tough. Just be compassionate, sweet, and kind. I'm here to tell you, you're not in charge if you are. And you're accountable with what you do. Sometimes, are you willing? Are you willing to do what's best for people, even if you know it's going to make them mad at you? Right? It all depends on your motivation. Are they there to make you look good? Or are you there to make them look good? See, these principles are interesting. We all know them to be the truth, but we hear the lies around us through all these shows on television and other things. We tend to think it's the exact opposite. Therefore, we start trying to be self-confident, cocky, egomaniacs, thinking that that's what leadership's about. And it's the exact opposite. To me, it's just great things for us to all hear and understand. Now, some of you would say, you know, Jeff, this is great, man. You know, but my boss is not here, right? I did invite him. He is an absolute egomaniac jerk. How can I handle that? We're going to talk to you next week. I mean, seriously, that's what next week is, a word to the employee. Believe it or not, the Bible has a lot more to say to you than it does in here. But what it does say here is pretty amazing. So next week, I want to share these things with you just from what the Scripture says. Now, things to learn. These are just real easy for you just to take with you. They're really just review, but just to kind of just throw them at you and let you hear them. Number one, a leader who is worth following is one who is committed to doing what's right, not just what's legal. As someone who's a leader, especially if you're a leader in the workforce, you will have many chances to do what's right versus what's legal. Just because it's legal does not make it right. The abortion issue. It is legal, but it is not right. Just straightforward. You're going to have the opportunity in your business to do what's right versus what's legal. Okay, you can get away with it. Yeah, they can say it's legal. But the question is, are you committed? Are you committed to doing what's right? And that's a huge issue in what we stand for and what we do. Number two, personal humility always promotes much more unity or fellowship than personal ego. It's just the truth. I've already shared with you, who wants to work with someone that it's all about them? That it's all about them. Number three, remember that the people who work for you are a stewardship for which you are accountable. This is perhaps one of the heaviest of them. And it's something that we all feel that have anybody, if you're a parent or if you have anybody that is under your authority, is this particular thought, is that I am accountable. They're a stewardship. God has put them underneath me, at least for this time, at least for this much of time, and I am accountable with how I lead them. And again, it's a state of mind that goes back to that Colossians chapter 4, verse 1. So as I close today, again, we just wanted to kind of give you some practical things through the weeks. Next week, a word to the employee. Let me tell you what the week after that is. It's a message I've already put together, and the title of it's God's Design for Rest. And you're going to understand. We're going to talk about why is there a Sabbath day. We're going to talk about that with work goes rest, and what all those things look like. You'll be amazed at what you see in the Scriptures. So we're doing a lot of good practical things for us to see as believers, how we approach this thing that consumes so much of our life. Obviously, if there's never been a time in your life, you put your faith and trust in Christ, even though that's not been the point today. But if you'd like to know what it means to be a believer, there'll be some pastors up here afterwards. All right, God bless you. Let's all stand, and we'll have a closing word of prayer. Tim, why don't you come up and close us? And God bless you guys, and have a wonderful rest of your day. All right, Tim.